Okay, stay tuned. Coming up, I've got Dan Sherman, who will be talking about his book, Above Black, Project Preserve Destiny, an insider account of alien contact and government cover-up. That's coming up. I promised you something even stranger than what we talked about the first part of the show tonight. Mike, you know, first of all, let me set this up a little bit. I was surfing the web, and I came across this gentleman, and his book is called Above Black, Project Preserve Destiny, an insider account of alien contact and government cover-up. And I had an opportunity to listen to some interviews that he had done on the radio, and at first, you know, it sounded like a real kook story. I mean, real odd and very strange and out there and almost implausible. But after really getting into the meat of it, there may be something here. Very interesting story indeed. And so we'll get on with that. My guest, Dan Sherman, spent almost 3 years as an intuitive communicator while serving in the United States Air Force. Now, in his book, Above Black, he tells of his training, things he learned from his alien contacts, and the events that led him to seek a discharge from the United States Air Force at all costs. And it's my pleasure to welcome to the program tonight Dan Sherman. Good evening, Dan.
Good evening, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on the program. Now, let's get right to it. We're going to run out of time on this first hour, but we're going to have you over the second hour to talk about this. But real quick, frame for us what Above Black is about. What happened to you?
Well, it started with the project itself started in 1960, as it was told to me, and they were abducting humans for genetic management purposes to see what their compatibility is and to, I guess, do some record keeping. And then in 1963 is when the actual genetic management phase started, where they actually started to abduct humans to do this particular project, to conduct this particular project. And as it was told to me, the project was designed to harvest, or to however you want to call it, but to raise humans so that they would have the ability to intuitively communicate with the aliens. And this was designed to provide a worldwide communication link in a future event where all electromagnetic communications were going to be lost. So it's a pretty involved story, as you can see.
Right, it is indeed. But now let's start off here in the remaining time we have in this segment. What happened? How did you discover all of this?
Well, I went to school. I was an electronic intelligence operations specialist, and I went to school at Fort Meade, Maryland, where NSA is headquartered. And the first day that I arrived at my hotel, and I got a call from somebody saying he needed to meet me. So it was a captain, and I said, okay, fine. I thought it kind of odd that a captain wanted to meet with me specifically and nobody else, but from the school, but whatever. You know, you do as you're told when you're in the military.
Right.
So I met him at the NSA headquarters building and had to go through some security procedures, but we ended up in his office, and he unfolded in front of me another reason why I would be at the NSA headquarters. I'd be attending a night school to uncover an ability that was genetically managed in me.
Now, obviously, when you're told something like this, what was your reaction?
Well, I guess the first reaction is obviously disbelief. I thought maybe there was a joke, a practical joke or something
right.
like that. Somebody was going to jump out of the closet and start, you know, laughing at me.
I would have walked on the ceiling, of course, but, you know.
But the whole tone of it and the whole how he presented it and everything, it really did not seem like a joke at all. Although I kind of wanted to, just for reality purposes, I wanted to think that it was a joke at first, but it wasn't. And as he continued with the story and unfolding it in front of me, it became more and more clear that it wasn't a joke and that there was something obviously to this. But until something actually physically happened to me that solidified in my mind that this was real, I still, up to that point, harbored some feelings like, okay, this is not happening, this is not real, this is it's still a practical joke. There's something
right.
something amiss here.
Right.
And then when I went to school for the uncovering of the abilities, and as I stated in the book, it's called flattening the lines. Once I flattened my first line or manipulated a line on the screen first, the first time I did that, that's when it really hit me that this is not this is not a game. You know, this is something that's real and
something
true.
Yeah. Now, before we get to that, let's kind of go back to the part where he's telling you all of this.
Uh-huh.
Basically, how did he tell you that the aliens were doing this?
Well, he just he opened it up by saying that I was genetically managed in my mother's womb to have this particular ability, and they called it intuitive communications. I was an IC, intuitive communicator. And he said that it started in 1963 and ended in 1968, and he didn't say how many people were genetically managed, but I'm assuming that thousands were. And he didn't give a lot of details. You know, he didn't. Of course, I was so stunned that I had so many. I had probably 1,000 questions, but I couldn't get any of them out. I did ask whether I was part alien or not, and I remember thinking when I asked that question, I can't believe I'm having this conversation.
Right, I would imagine.
It was pretty. Pretty interesting, that's for sure. I remember the answer, obviously. He said no, and he said that he's had the opportunity to tell several people this particular thing before, and he said every single one of them have asked the same question. And he said, no, you are completely human. It's just that your DNA was manipulated in such a way that it heightened the ability that you already have as a human, but it heightened that ability so that you can participate in this project.
Did he say that the abductions were by the government or by aliens?
Well, he didn't say either way, but I inferred just by his tone and the way he was presenting it to me that it was in concert with one another. It was the aliens were in concert with the human beings, because obviously the humans or the military framework of the project, they obviously knew about this because they knew that I was genetically managed, and they brought me forward and put me through the school, and the school obviously had a lot of traits to it that were not of human origin that I could tell. So yeah, it was a project that was in concert with one another.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this question. Have you discussed this with your mother?
No, I haven't. I haven't discussed it with any of my family, my side of the family, only because there is really no point. I know what happened to me was true, and to bring it up to my family, there's two scenarios that can happen. One, my mother could say, yeah, I do have some memories of that, and then we just go on, or she'd say, you're crazy, I don't have any memories of that, and then our relationship would be strained. So either way, there's no good that comes of it.
Does your mother know you published a book?
No.
She doesn't?
Not.
Wow.
Yeah. And I suspect that someday I'll have to bring this up to her, and we'll have to discuss it. But if she has memories, great. If she doesn't, then what is it, you know, what is it further?
Well, you know, I'm just out of curiosity. I mean, I think if it was me that this was happening to, and this may be what you're doing with the book and all of this, you know, the search that you're on, trying to get to the bottom of what was going on, and we're going to come to that, I guess, in the discussion tonight about the things that happened to you and the you know, the bizarre things that really got you, what you got involved in.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there are probably lots of questions in your mind as to what really happened.
Yeah, but you know what? My relationship with my mother is worth more than the knowledge that I would have from it, because she may react negatively to it and our relationship would be strained, and that has already happened mm-hmm. on other sides of the family, my wife's side of the family. So it's just not worth it to me.
Right, okay. Now, and welcome back my guest, Dan Sherman. We're talking about his book, Above Black, Project Preserve Destiny. And Dan, in the remaining moments of this hour, let me ask you this real quick. How has all of this affected you?
Initially, you thought that it was kind of an over-the-top story.
Uh-huh.
I think the general consensus amongst the mainstream media and the mainstream people is that Dan Sherman is pretty much wacko.
Well, I don't know about that. Go ahead. Finish what you're going
to
say.
Well, and so in answer to your question, it really hasn't changed it much, because not much emphasis has been placed on it. It's been kind of pushed aside by the media. And my contention is, if I were going to make up a story, wouldn't I? And you know, I have security clearances that are verifiable. You know,
right.
I have background. If I were going to make up a story that I wanted to garner attention or something, I would make up something that was.
Well, yeah, and I don't think that's what this is about. I really don't. But let me do this. We got about a minute. This book, is it available in bookstores or is it a direct order from you?
Sure, it can be bought in bookstores. Be bought on Amazon.com. You can order directly from the publisher. The number to order it directly is 888-240-1825. And you can also get information about it at the website, aboveblack.com.
Okay, and give out the 800 number again, please.
888-240-1825. Shipping is free. And you can see it at aboveblack.com as well.
Aboveblack.com. www.aboveblack.com.
Yep.
Very interesting book. And, of course, you're going to stay over for the second hour. And that's it for my national audience. Dan Sherman is my guest, and we're talking about his book, Above Black. And you might want to get a copy of it. It's a very, very interesting read and talk radio. And you're joining us from the first hour. We have returning my guest, Dan Sherman. He's published a book, Above Black, Project Preserve Destiny, an insider account of alien contact and government cover-up. And as you heard Dan mention during the first hour, he was told at a training class that he attended at the NSA in Fort Meade, Maryland, that he was the product of genetic management to ultimately become an intuitive communicator. And we're going to get into this story with Dan, who has been kind enough to join us for the second hour. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks for being on the program. Now, let's kind of get into the next step here. You were told by this gentleman that all this is going on, and you were told that you would be attending a class. And tell us about that.
Well, I attended a night class while I was attending my regular day class that I had originally gone there for,
mm-hmm.
Which was electronic intelligence. It was an intermediate ELINT class. And at night, after I got home from the hotel, it happened every single time. About 45 minutes after I got back to my hotel, a van would show up, and I would get in the van, and it would take me to my class location. I had absolutely no idea where it was going. It always varied its route.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, I have a cold, so
that's okay.
With me.
Summer colds are terrible.
Yeah, it is. It varied its route, so I never really knew how far of a distance it was from my hotel. It varied anywhere from 20 to 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I would get there, and excuse me, it would go into a garage type of what I assumed was a garage, because the only thing that I could see was the interior when I got out of the van.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go into a door. And now, of course, the captain who indoctrinated me into the program here, he took me through all this the first time, obviously, so I knew exactly, you know, what the routine was.
Mm-hmm.
But I go through a metal door and then through another metal door, and it had some security procedures. And then I went down in an elevator down, I'd say, I don't know, 50 feet or something like that. It wasn't a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then the elevator door opened, and I came into a room. It was a very small room. It had two consoles in it with two computers, one on each side of the room. And actually, I went through school with another student, too, while I was there. And he had the other console, and I had one console. And that's where my school was for the nighttime activities,
mm-hmm.
for the 6 or 8 weeks that I was there.
Now, this classroom that you're talking about,
excuse me.
That's okay. You mentioned that there were pills.
Yeah, I was supposed to take pills, or I did take pills while I was there. And when I was going through the indoctrination, he mentioned that I needed to take these pills, and they would always be on the desk when I got there. There was a desk right in the middle of the room, and there was just a pitcher of water and some glasses. And there was always a pill there for me to take. Actually, it was two.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, there would be four pills there, two for me and two for the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him what these were, and he said he really didn't even know, but they were designed to help uncover and heighten the ability of the intuitive communicating.
Now, tell us about the computer console that you worked at.
Mm-hmm. It was a regular computer screen, keyboard, no mouse. And the computer screen had 10 boxes in it on the display.
Mm-hmm.
It displayed 10 boxes, and in each box there was a line, And many of you out there may be familiar with the oscilloscope, the green worm, you know, the squiggly worm on an oscilloscope.
Right.
That's what was in each one of these 10 boxes. And, excuse me, and there was a perfect sine wave in each one of these 10 boxes. And the goal, my goal, was to mentally flatten each one of these lines. In other words, to manipulate those electrons via just my mind. And I was not hooked to the computer screen at all. There was no biofeedback or anything like that. Of course, when I was first told this, I was like, okay, yeah, uh-huh, that's really going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I just followed the directions. My instructor told me directions through the headphones that I had on. And I never interfaced with an instructor in person. It was always through the headphones. The only people that I ever saw during the school was the person that I was going to school with and the captain contact that I had, initial contact. That was it.
Okay.
And so instructions were fed to me through the headphones, and he told me how to start to uncover these abilities. And what he told me was to mentally hum the tones that he was going to play back in my headphones. And it started with one tone, and then I would try to mentally hum that. And if you can sit there and listen to a note and then try to mentally hum it for 4 or 5 hours, you can get a sense of how crazy this made me in the first couple of days.
Yeah.
It took a lot of concentration, a lot of effort. And I think after the first, I think it was the third day or something like that, that I actually moved one of the sine waves. And this was the time that I mentioned in the previous hour that it actually confirmed to me that this was something that was actually happening, that it was true, what he told me was true, and it was quite an exciting feeling.
I bet. Now, let's diverge a little bit here, because obviously there's some questions that come up as far as things concerning secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
Were you told about any kinds of secrecy, or were you sworn any kind of secrecy?
Well, I guess this is a good time to explain a little bit of background about the black and gray and those types of projects. As it was told to me, every gray project, and gray project meaning that it has something to do, it's related somehow to an alien contact or alien technology or something like that, every gray project is hidden beneath the cloak of a black project.
Mm-hmm.
And then every black project is hidden beneath the cloak of a top secret project, and then it goes from there, secret, and
kind of like an onion.
Exactly, and that's how I describe it in the book. Is that that's how it was described to me, as this onion effect. In the center, you have the highest level of classification that base or that area has,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of bases don't have anything above secret. But there are some bases that go all the way to the gray project. And so when you are involved with the gray project, you are automatically also indoctrinated into the black project that is co-located with that gray project.
But you don't necessarily know what the object of the black project is.
Yes, you do.
Oh, you do?
Well, in most cases you do.
Okay.
The particular case in my schooling, obviously, there was a gray project there. I was not indoctrinated into the black project there, only because everything was kept hidden from me. The location, if I went back there, I couldn't tell you squat about where it was,
right?
Where the class was, and my only interface was that headphone. So they kept everything secret from me, as well as the black project. But when you're going to a normal base and you're going to be working on your gray project, you have to be indoctrinated into the black project too, because that's the whole reason you're there to the world, to the classified world.
Right. Did you ever get a sense for what kind of cooperation or what kind of interface there was between, say, you know, human beings and whatever this intelligence is?
Well, I got a sense that it was a it was definitely a partnership, because I never really sensed that there were two opposing forces. You know, when I did get to the phase of the project where I was interfacing with aliens, I never got the feeling that they were trying to hide anything that their human counterparts, you know, the people who are involved with this, didn't know, or vice versa. But I did also get a sense that the control was theirs and not ours, definitely. I mean, we were completely at
their behest.
Of whatever their intentions were or whatever their overall mission is.
We were there at their behest.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, let's go back to the school that you were attending. I found in your book you cover an interesting, an incident where at one point you got a little curious about where you were as far as what location or what, you know, you were pulled into a garage every time or what appeared to be a garage. Tell us about that.
Well, I saw when I got out of you have to remember that after several weeks of doing this, it just became commonplace. You know, everything was just
routine.
Exactly. It's routine. You just go through it. So you get really used to what is around you and what is normal, what is not normal. I got out of the van one time, and I noticed to the left that there was a light shining that I had not noticed before, or I had never noticed before. So I looked over to the left, and I noticed that they were shining on the wall as if it were headlights. So I got curious, and I thought, well, maybe there's something on the other side of the van. So I turned to my right, and I went towards the back of the van, and I started to inch my way around there, just kind of. You do it very trepidatiously because you're not really supposed to be doing anything other than what they told you to do.
Right.
So I was kind of peeking around the van, and then all of a sudden, the van driver, the one that drove me there all the time, he honked his horn. And, of course, it scared me half to death, and I turned back around and kept going towards my original destination door. But what I did notice was it was a white van on the other side of the van that I was driven here to. It was a white van, and I noticed the bumper, and that's basically all I noticed about it before I turned back around. Well, I think it was the next weekend. I was going to a movies. It was late at night. It was a Friday night, I think it was. I was coming home, and I came up to the exit of where my hotel was, and I noticed there was a two-lane exit, and I was turning right. And over on the left lane, we were at a light. I noticed a white van, and in the back of my mind, I was thinking, wouldn't that be cool if that was it? And, of course, I had thought of this before, and other white vans, too, that I'd seen since then. But this particular one, I noticed that it had a dent in the bumper. And I noticed that same dent in the bumper of the one in the garage.
Okay.
So, of course, I completely freaked out. And I got over in the lane behind them once the light turned green, and I followed the van, and I followed it to where its destination was. And it went to a company that is involved with noise cancellation, you know, the cancellation of noises through repeating the noise back with the same power level and 180 degrees out of phase. Anyway, it's a company that is one of the forefront companies in canceling noise. And I thought that was quite interesting. I never was able to put any more correlation to it other than that. I think it's probably fairly obvious that perhaps the Black Project that's co-located with the Gray Project there has something to do with noise cancellation and obviously with some sort of alien technology.
I see what you're saying. So, in other words, this white van linked to a private company that is involved in noise cancellation and may have had some involvement in whatever it was that you were involved in.
Exactly.
I see. Now, go ahead. What were you going to say?
That's it.
Okay. Now, you go through the class, and as time goes, you're able to manipulate these 10 windows and these 10 lines. Then what happens?
I went back to my regular base, my regular Air Force base, my regular assignment, and I was told before I left that I would be introduced to my next Gray Project commander, my next Gray Project contact, and I would be introduced to this person by the captain that I had been talking to at NSA. And it's called a third-party handoff. They hand you off to another contact, and it has to be done via some sort of vocal or personal contact.
Right.
So I get orders to my next base. It came fairly quickly after that. I got orders to another base, and this base, in the book, I called Project Desert Destiny Base Number 1, Base Number 1, and I was stationed at two bases that I was actively involved with PPD, Project Desert Destiny. And the reason why I don't disclose this or talk about the name of the bases or anything is because I was also connected with Black Projects, and then you get into security issues. But my record can definitely uncover these bases that I was at, obviously.
When you say Black Projects, though, they were not related to Project Preserve Destiny.
No, the Black Projects are never related to the Gray Project.
I see.
Black Projects actually are black because they have some sort of national significance.
I
national
see.
Level significance.
You're talking to a neophyte here, a security neophyte, who doesn't know very much about
sure.
classifications.
Black projects are justifiably classified because of some sort of national security, whether it be some sort of nationally based weapons system. They are legitimately classified, at least the ones that I was involved with. They were very legitimately classified.
So your job as an intuitive communicator was essentially riding piggyback to another job that you were functioning at these bases.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say riding piggyback. They were autonomous from one another, definitely.
I see. Okay.
And one of them had nothing to do with the other, only that the Black Project was there to cloak the Gray Project.
Okay. Now, I'd
like to clarify, that's one of the reasons why you don't see a lot of people coming forward with gray information. Is because, and this is the exact reason why they do this, they indoctrinate you into the Black Project, and they are so intermingled as far as other issues that if you disclose a Gray Project or anything about a Gray Project, you are most likely, unless you're very careful like I was, hopefully,
mm-hmm.
You are most likely going to reveal some sort of black information. And that is what they get you on. They'll arrest you for disclosing the black information, and thereby shutting you up, but at the same time, they're not admitting to the gray information.
I understand, and that's kind of where you are in all of this.
Exactly.
Okay. Dan, I'm curious. Now, let's get into the actual contact that you had,
mm-hmm.
and let's talk about that next.
Sure.
What happened?
Well, I went to my first base that was an operational base for me as far as the Gray Project goes,
mm-hmm.
and... it took about a month before I was actually handed off to my next contact, my next Gray Project contact. And then after that, it took probably about 3 weeks or so before I had my first contact. And, of course, at this point, I really had no idea what to expect. I knew that I would be – the whole premise behind this was that I would be practicing my intuitive communications abilities in the event, or for the event in the future, that all electromagnetic communications were going to cease. And the militaries around the world, they had to, or the governments around the world, had to continue communications.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the method by which they were going to do it, is through the intuitive communicators.
How did you get information about what may be, a cataclysm of some sort?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
I was wondering how you got the information that there may be a cataclysm, I guess is the right
word.
Well,
that was the original
statement,
indoctrination or speech that was given to me
uh-huh.
by my first contact at NSA headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
He said that the reason, because I asked him why all this, and he said that I would be intuitive communicator for, you know, blah, 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 the event in the future. I asked him what the event was, and he says, I don't know, it's just that this is the project, and,
okay.
and you have to remember that these things are, you know, they don't tell you more than what you need to know.
Right.
And and of course, that is just assuming, of course, that they were telling me the truth. Maybe it was for another reason. Maybe this whole project is for another reason.
Mm-hmm.
I have absolutely no idea of knowing, or no way of knowing.
Right.
So the first contact came at the first base, and I just started to receive a string of information, which, you know, of course, would become routine to me over time, but at this point, it was the first one, and it really startled me. I was told how the communications would come as far as kind of what to expect, but, of course, the first one is always, it's definitely a surprise. And I just started to receive a string of information, and it started with a five-digit, what I what I refer to as a zip code, but it would start with a five-digit number, or excuse me, a three-digit number, and then after that a five-digit number. The three-digit number was my number, which was 118, and then a five-digit number would come. And I always assumed maybe this was a communications identifying number or something, but this information would come to me, and then I would open up, and this was instructed. I was instructed on how to do this at this particular location by the contact, but I would open up a window in the background of my computer screen, my normal, you know, computer that I worked with under my normal duties, and I would open up a window in the background, and I would type the communications that I would receive. They would only be about 40 seconds long, something like that. And then I would send that information. I had absolutely no idea where it went to, but that was it.
And that's all the communication you had?
No, I received communications sometimes twice a week, three times a week.
But when I say that, I'm talking about basically that was the 40 seconds and that was it.
Yep.
Now, did you hear this in your head, or how did this come to you?
Well, that's a very difficult thing to explain. Obviously, it was a mental process, but it was a very structured process, too. It wasn't... A lot of people say, well, are you clairvoyant or are you psychic or do you have some sort of telepathic powers? I have absolutely no idea because I have no frame of reference. I don't know what a telepathic power is. I don't know what a... all I know is I was taught how to do this, and it came to me naturally after I was taught, and there's no frame of reference. I don't know what exactly to compare it to, but I just received this information, and at first it was just numbers. excuse me. And it was sort of a language. It wasn't a language in the traditional sense of from point A to point B, you know, from left to right, but it was a language in the sense that it had an underlying structure to it, but it was, I describe it in the book as, it's sort of like somebody putting up a tapestry in front of you, and then you can, they point out a certain part of the tapestry, and they say, okay, this is the communication. It's red and green here and blue, and that's the communication. But in the peripheral of your vision, you can see so much more of the tapestry, and that's how these communications were. They would put up a tapestry of communication in front of me. Of course, I'm human, so I process things logically from point A to point B, you know, linearly.
Right.
But so I would have to process the information in some sort of linear fashion, and that's expected because I'm human. But the information came to me not in a linear way. It was not linear. And that's that. I've struggled with how to explain this in the past, and that's the best way that I can explain it. It was very unusual, that's for sure. And a lot of people ask me, well, how do you know these were aliens that were communicating with you? And that's the only thing that I have to go on, is that it was not a communication that I could tell of human origin, because it didn't have the human type of characteristics of language and communication.
Just plain odd.
Yeah, it's a good
yeah.
Term.
Now, you had actual discussions, I should say. I guess that's an appropriate word. You had discussions with the alien or the aliens that you communicated with on two occasions. When I say two occasions, on two bases.
Yeah, I had two different alien contacts. One at the first base and another at the second base.
What kind of information were they imparting, or what kind of questions were you asking?
Well, they didn't. It's a really long story on how I started to communicate other questions. Because when we first started, I just thought this was a one-way communication, although I knew that I could communicate back because I would say slow down or repeat that or something like that. But it never occurred to me that I should ask questions or anything like that, because it wasn't meant for that, as far as what I was told up to that point. But I stumbled upon a different way, and I'm not going to get into it because it's a long explanation, but I stumbled upon something that made me think that maybe I should, or maybe I can, without being monitored, ask a question or find out more information on a personal level. And I did start to do that, and they were both fine with it. And I did learn some things. I didn't learn as much as I wanted to, because a lot of things they just wouldn't answer. And, you know, in our human terms, or human conversations, we ask something and they say, that's none of your business, or they answer it, or whatever. But when I ask a question that didn't warrant an answer, I just didn't get an answer. There's just nothing there.
Right.
So
shut off the link and that was it.
Yeah. And maybe they were still there. It's just that there would be nothing forthcoming. So I asked a lot of questions. A lot of them didn't get answered, but a lot of them did. And I'm assuming you want some examples here.
Well, sure.
One of the things that I've always been fascinated with since I was a kid was time, and you know Albert Einstein's theory and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I did tend to dwell on this a lot. I asked him about time and can you go backwards and forwards in time and things like that. One of the things that I do remember is that he said that time really doesn't mean the same to them as it does to us because they've found a way to manipulate time in a way that we have not found yet.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of the method in which they transport themselves to, the travel that they do. And as far as the backward and forward in time, he said you have to assume that there exists a reference point from which to measure backward and forward.
Mm-hmm.
And time is so elusive that you can't do that. You can't go backwards in time because you have to assume that there's some sort of reference point to go backward from.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no reference point in time. So he said basically that was a non-issue. It was not possible. But he said that instead of traveling through time, they travel around time. And that was one of the ways that they travel, is that they manipulate time by going around it. I never really, obviously I have a human brain and human intellect, and I didn't really understand a lot of what they were saying about time. And what I did understand, I just put down on paper, and that was it. But it was very fascinating conversations about time. And the going around time, I think that has a lot to do with Einstein's theory about how light travels around star systems, you know, because of the gravity.
Right.
So maybe they use gravity and time.
Did they ever identify where they were from?
No, they didn't. I think I asked it one time, but and maybe they did say something about it, but I can't remember exactly what it was. You have to remember that a lot of our conversations were so far above my head that I really didn't even know what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them had to do with the time issue and things like that. No, I don't remember anything specific about where they were from.
Okay, let's spend a couple of minutes then on what things kind of started taking a turn when you got to your second base.
Excuse me. I started towards the end of my stint with Project Preserve Destiny. I started to receive information that had to do with, and what I thought had to do with abductions and current abductions that were happening today now.
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt uncomfortable with this only because I was reporting the after effects of it, and I didn't really know what the background was, why it was happening, what was happening exactly, what the goal was. I felt very, very isolated, and I felt like a tool that perhaps wasn't being utilized in the proper way.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it begs the question: well, why in the world do they tell you stuff about about abductions? I have no idea. I don't know why they did that. Maybe they did that so that they could test me to see if I could communicate them in the proper way, if I could stomach it, you know, and continue on. But the human part of me said that this is wrong, something's wrong, because I reported a lot of things like some of the headings of the comms were, and these were my own words based on my translation of what they were telling me, but potentiality for recall, this was one of the headings that they would report. And, of course, each heading had a number after it from 1 to 100. I never really knew what was good and what was bad as far as, you know, if 20 was good or 20 was bad.
Right.
But they had headings like potentiality for recall, residual pain levels. There was just so much of it that I felt really bad about, because if there's a residual pain level, then obviously there's some sort of pain there. And so anyway, I questioned this, and I started to query my commander via email saying, you know, what's going on here? Why is this happening? And I wasn't getting any answers. So I said, look, I don't want to be part of this anymore. I want out of it. And make a long story short, he said, basically, no way. You're not getting out of it. You're basically your destiny. You're going to do it.
You're locked in here.
Yeah. And so I tried to get out through. See, I had two chains of commands, a black chain of command and a gray chain of command. And I tried through the other chain of command, the black chain of command, to get out through just normal ways to get out of the military.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't happening because my, it's a long story, but I didn't get out that way. So I took drastic measures, and I finally got out.
What kind of drastic measures did you take?
Well, it was a legal maneuver that I really can't I can't expound upon.
Mm-hmm.
It obviously says it in my release papers.
Mm-hmm.
But
are your release papers available for?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Anybody can get them.
All right.
Freedom of Information Act.
Okay.
All and right. As well, my bases that I was stationed at.
Okay.
But you'll see the last base that I was stationed at. Has some interesting things. Well, it's in the book, too. I have a copy of my orders in the book. And it has some interesting indicators on there that say that it's not a normal assignment.
Okay. And, Dan, we're going to be running out of time, so we've got to cram a lot more in real quick if we can. basically, what is, from all the stuff that has happened to you, because obviously in talking with you, I find you very sincere and believable. What do you think is really happening? What's going on? What is your best guess based upon the information that you have gathered from your experience?
Well, I have conflicting feelings. There are sometimes when I feel that what they told me about the electromagnetic communications being disrupted, I feel that has some sort of legitimacy to it because, you know, we could have a meteor strike or pole shifting or something like that. And, of course, during those times, the government would want to keep some sort of communications, you know, to outlying areas and to other countries and things like that. That holds some sort of water, I guess. But you know, the government lies to us so much about gray projects and the hiding of, you know, that information and things like that that why would they tell me the truth? You know, why
mm-hmm.
I was just a pawn in the or a tool, and you know, why should I know the truth about that?
Are you angry about that?
You know, at this point, no. I was at the time. I've pretty much put it behind me as far as the anger and the bitterness and things like that. You know, I really loved my career in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
I would have stayed in if it hadn't been for this particular situation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I harbor some bitterness there. You know, I was in for 12 years, and I had 8 more years to go, and, you know, I had a good career.
Mm-hmm.
But, the more you linger on things, the more it becomes destructive bitterness. So I've moved on.
What about the alien question? I mean, what is your position on this question? I mean, are you convinced that whatever occurred to you, that it did have something to do with a non-human intelligence?
I'm absolutely convinced of that. That is one of the things that I am very sure about. I'm not so sure about what the overall agenda is. I think Project Preserve Destiny is just one of the projects out there that has to do with aliens. I think the government is
fully involved?
I think there's a lot more involvement other than just Project Preserve Destiny. But I also think that the factions of government that are in charge of these different types of great programs, they probably do not know that the others exist because the government is so fragmented.
And so highly compartmentalized.
Yeah, exactly. That it's very – I don't even think you can trace it back to one person that knows everything. I think you could have maybe back in the 50s or, you know, I think Eisenhower had a very, very, very big impact on the great projects.
Mm-hmm.
But – I don't think today that there is one person that you can go to uncover the whole thing. There's no way.
What do you think is, in other words, when we're talking about this stuff, as far as the alien question, do you get a sense for whether or not there's a cooperative spirit or, you know, you mentioned that we were at the behest of them. Does that mean that we're in some doo-doo here, deep doo-doo, or is there any hostility or... I mean, exactly what do you think it could be?
Through my experience, I don't feel that they have hostile motivations or whatever. Of course, that could be a wrong read, but that was my feeling when I was contacting and communicating with the two entities that I did.
Mm-hmm.
I had absolutely no feeling of malice or anything like that.
How about evil?
No, I didn't. If anything, I felt more compassion than anything else. They have visited us, and this they visit us throughout our history. They've impacted some societies in history. And so I think if they had malicious intent, it would have been done long ago.
Okay, but your motivation for quitting the project sounded like there was a moral objection to what was going on.
Well, you know, but I think it had to do more with I was disappointed with the humans aspect of it than I was the alien aspect of it,
mm-hmm.
only because I wasn't getting any information from them. And I think that, yeah, the aliens, I think, controlled the whole shoot and shebang, but the human aspect of it, well, obviously there was some sort of pain that was being inflicted on these people. That I'm almost 100% sure of based mm-hmm. on my communications. But what the overall goal and overall objective of that of inflicting the pain, I don't think is evil. Maybe, you know, there's pain that can be done in the short term to help humans in the long term. I don't know. But I know that my experience in translating these communications was it didn't make me feel good.
Well, I kind of would be hard-pressed to not be able to identify it or at least define it as evil when we look at some of the inflictions against humanity that, say, the Nazis did,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we termed the experimentation that was done on human beings as evil and wrong, criminally wrong even.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just kind of curious as to how you square away with that stuff, because I would have to agree with you. I mean, I would be very unsettled to find out that, you know, some kind of weird stuff was going on with people that was probably being done against their will.
Well, I have conflicting mm-hmm. Feelings in that area. I don't feel overall that they had a malicious intent, but I did see, based on the communications, the abduction communications, that they were abducting and there were pain levels.
Mm-hmm.
But my contention there is perhaps, and this is what I try to cling to, perhaps that those residual pain levels had really nothing to do with the long-term effects of, you know, of extermination or whatever, like
sure.
you know, what you're saying about the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, we go through pain in everyday life just to get to the other side and get good feelings. So maybe there's some sort of altruistic reason for mm-hmm. this. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's very interesting. What do you think what is the bottom line here? I mean, where do you think you're going to land in all of this?
Well, my only intent on this really was to open up a door that hasn't really been opened up before, in that you don't have too many insiders coming out to mm-hmm. the Gray Projects because of the ramifications of doing such, and I haven't felt any of those ramifications, so maybe others will feel. And you have to do it carefully, too. You can't reveal black information, which I have gone through lengths not to.
Right.
And maybe others will feel more comfortable doing that, and we'll get some sort of the puzzle out. I don't think we'll ever get the full story, unless, like your guest said before, they reveal the whole story.
Mm-hmm.
As in the aliens. But I don't think we're going to get it from the humans.
Are there aliens cohabiting bases with
them? I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No. I don't think so.
Do you think there's any truth to some of the stories about landings at bases or anything like that?
In my original conversation with the captain, and when he was telling me about Project Reserve Destiny, he said that as a result of alien contact in 1947, and at that time, 1947 had nothing, no significance to me whatsoever, but obviously the world knows about 1947 now. I think that probably started the... at least the American communication with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I do believe that there has been landings. There have been landings. There have been crashes. I think that that's very probable.
And there has been definitely communication and some kind of cooperation.
Well, to my knowledge, I think that's very, very true. Yes. Mm-hmm. People might disagree.
Have you been approached by anyone about your book?
No, I haven't. I've had some interesting things happen, though. I sent some very interesting pictures to a publication in UK.
Mm-hmm.
They sent them back, and I never received them. And that really irritated me because at the time, I should have been more careful in that area, but I wasn't. And I didn't get backup copies of them, and they still have them electronically. They still haven't given them to me. But
they just never physically were returned.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we've had some mail opened that's come that's been opened. You know, just little things like that. You really can't put a finger on, you know, definitive things that have happened. But
mm-hmm.
I'm fully convinced that I've been monitored, definitely.
Okay. All right.
But there's been no approach, no nothing.
Okay, we're about out of time. Give out some information about how people can get a copy of Above Black.
Sure, you can get it at any bookstore. It might be a special order item because it's not a regularly shelved item. If you want to get it quicker, you can call the publisher 888-240-1825, and they have an automated order line on there.
Okay.
That's 888-240-1825. The shipping is free. So, also, you can see more about the book on the website, www.aboveblack.com.
Okay, very good. Dan, I want to thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you, Michael.
Very interesting story. And if anything develops in your quest, please keep in touch with us, okay?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dan.